This is the Lansing Fisher Body Historical Team. We are here today interviewing Marlene Hester. We are at the Frank Dreyer Greenhouse across from the local 602 Union Hall. It is February 16th at approximately 10:50 a.m. Marlene, I'm going to go around the room and have everyone share their name for the record.
Gary Judy.
Earl Nicholson.
Cheryl McQuaid.
Marilyn Coulter.
And Doug Rademacher. Marlene, would you please say your name and spell your name for the record?
My name is Marlene Hester, M-A-R-L-E-N-E-H-E-S-T-E-R.
And where do you live? What is your address?
818 Eugenia Drive, Mason, Michigan.
Okay. And you are female, correct?
Yes.
Caucasian. Now, would you tell me, do you have any educational background?
Well, I graduated from high school, and I have an associate's degree.
Okay. Are you married?
No.
Do you have any children?
Yes.
And would you tell us a little bit about them?
I have a daughter, Marisa Yvonne. She's just turned 26. And I have a son, Mark William. He is 21.
Okay. And do you have any military service?
No.
All right. What did your parents do?
My father worked at the Olds at the jet plant. And my mom was a stay-at-home mom.
Okay. Would you please tell us what you did before you hired in to the Fisher Body plant?
I had a job counting money that came out of the vending machines from the MSU campus. And on Fridays, I would count up to sometimes $20,000 worth of coins, and armored car come and get the money, and it didn't pay very well.
Well, that's going to lead into my next question. Why did you come to Fisher Body? Why did you hire in there?
It was a chance to triple my income.
Can you tell us, how did you hear about Fisher Body hiring?
I had a roommate, and she happened to tell me that her fiancé was going to go to the Olds and put in an app that day, and I said, so am I, but she must have said Fisher Body, because I took my lunch that day and come on into Lansing, and I stood in line for a little while, and then I put my app in the down front there, Fisher Body.
Can you share that vision, please? What was it like to drive into Lansing? Were you familiar with Lansing?
Yeah.
And when you drove up to put in your application, can you tell us about that?
There was a lot of people. There was like two or three lines, and just a lot of people trying to get their apps in. And I was fortunate. I got up to the front. I got to get an app and fill it out, turn it in.
And when did you hire into Fisher Body?
And they called me in August. August 8th, 1978.
How old were you when you hired in?
24.
I'm going to ask you about your first day on the into the plant. You were called to work. Can you talk about what happened? Did you know what went on inside the building? And
well, back then, we had a pretty good orientation. They take us to the labor relations room. There was quite a few of us, and we went through orientation. They were pretty thorough about what to expect. And that first day, it was different. Got lost easy, and it was a big place.
What shift and which department did you start in?
I was on the second shift, and I was up in trim, up in 3X2.
How did that happen? Can you talk about being in that room? How were you selected to go to this particular operation? Do you remember?
No. There were three or four of us, and they just said, follow me, and they took us out of the hospital, I think, and on up. We walked up into 3X and went to the boss, George Burdett, and they just put us on a job. I don't know how they selected it, or really, I don't know.
We can see your first day. Would you share with us what job did you do and tell us about that?
I stocked the rear belts on the B-line, on the 88 line.
Which belt would that be?
The rear seat belt.
Okay.
And I had to go on the manifest. It'd have a color. And so I had to pay attention. And then I would, there were pull straps at the time on the door. And under the pull strap, there was two screws to bolt the door in. So that's what I stacked the belts and I put in those pull strap screws.
Can you explain what a manifest is?
Manifest was the printout on the front of the car, and it stated what was supposed to go on that particular job. It was usually numbers and letters in a combination and told you what was needed for that particular car.
And how was your first day? Did you find it challenging?
Yes. Yes, I did. So I never worked in a factory before. It was totally foreign to me, and it was something to get used to. I'll never forget those first 2 weeks. I mean, feet hurt, body hurt, everything hurt bad.
Did anyone help you? Did you meet your union people? Early on, did someone come in and say, hi, I'm the union, or somebody was there to help you learn a job?
I'm sure there was someone to break me in, but it was like 20 minutes, and then I was on my own. I remember it was hardly no time at all, because I think they had the guys that gave relief before we shut the line down, but he wasn't too happy about breaking anybody in.
Gary, Judy.
Marlene, you said your girlfriend, roommate, came with you. Did she get hired in with you, or?
Her fiance was going to put in an app, John, and he ended up over, I believe, in Plant 3, and that's the best of my knowledge. She didn't put in an app.
Oh. Was there, you were a young girl and going into the factory, and was there a lot of other girls that hired in with you at that time?
Yeah, there was quite a few other women.
So it was, so you felt comfortable? I mean, did you make some friends the first day? And
yeah, I did.
Marilyn Coulter.
Marlene, I'm just going to take you back a little bit. Now, I know you said that you were from Lansing. Did you know anything or anybody who worked in Fisher Body? Had you heard any stories about the building?
No.
So, when you came in, he asked you where your other women. Were there other women in the department that you hired in?
Yes, there were.
And so there were other women down the line?
Mm-hmm.
Did they befriend you? Did they give you any words of wisdom on what it would be to work in it?
No, not really. We're just telling each other how bad our feet hurt and how bad our back hurt and just stuff like that for the first few weeks.
So now, were there any other women who were already seniority employees there who had already been working in the department?
Oh, yes. Yeah, there were.
Did they tell you how to make it through it?
I had an uncle, his name was Bob Simons, and he was a foreman at the Olds, He's the one that told me to buy shoes one size larger, wear two pair of socks. He says your feet are going to hurt worse than anything. So that's what I did. And they still hurt a lot. That break in time, you never forget it because it's so bad.
Earl Nicholson.
Did you wear boots or tennis shoes?
Boots.
Over the ankle boots? Or?
No, they weren't high top or anything. They were just regular boots.
Mm-hmm. And did you use gloves? And did they issue you gloves and safety glasses? And
yes, Had to use gloves. Just cloth gloves.
Doug Rademacher. Marlene, you had never worked an assembly line, a factory. Of course, you put a lot of coins, from what you said, into probably machines or sleeves or whatever, but can you tell what it was like to have a vehicle approach you? You've read the manifest. You grab your stock. Was there enough time to get your job done? Was it a challenge to get that job done?
There was enough time to get the job done. I had a big rack beside me. It had all the rear belts, all the colors. And it told me on the manifest it was K something, K with a number. And I threw the belts in and put in the pull strap screws. And then right next to me was my partner. He's the one that bolted in the rear belts. And then up the line, that's when the rear seats would go in. So had to pay attention, get the right color, get the right style, stuff like that.
Well, your goal was to learn how to do the job and keep up. When did you start establishing relationships with your coworkers?
Right away.
Right away. Do you remember your first break and things called wagons? Was there anything like that at that time?
Yeah.
Can you describe that?
Well, they had relief men then, and Quimby was my relief man, and he knew who the new guys were, and you couldn't complain, but he would cheat us out of our break 3 or 4 minutes. But what could you say? And, yeah, I remember the wagon coming up, buying stuff off the wagon.
Did you start waiting for that part of the day?
Yes.
I know the wagon was a bargain benefit, and it went away in the future. So I know we had breaks, but that wagon was a special break, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Earl Nicholson.
I was going to ask you when you first came into the factory, and when did you meet your supervisor? Do you remember who it was?
Well, there was a group of 4 of us that followed this person up into 3X, and it was either Lonnie Duke or George Burdett. I can't remember which foreman I had first. But that was the foremans that were up in 3X in my particular department.
And how was, do you remember the initial interaction between you and the supervisor? Did he just walk up and say anything important to you, or did he just ignore you? Or?
Yeah, Lonnie Duke was real, he was mean looking and a little bit grouchy. And George Burdett was a little more friendly and a little more open. So just do your job and you were all right.
Cheryl McQuaid.
Marlene, you said that Quimby was your relief man, and he would short you 3 or 4 minutes. Was there, and you couldn't do anything about it, was there any importance of that 3 or 4 minutes, and did it matter?
Yes, it did. Because add that up through the whole day, and it could have added up to almost 15 minutes. And when your feet are kicking you, and everything's hurting so bad, I mean, yeah, 5-6 minutes made all the difference. But he knew what he was doing. So, sooner he could get done, the sooner he could leave.
Doug Rademacher. Marlene, you said you were hurting, aching. Is that the common job in a auto factory? Was everybody hurting? There's thousands of people work there. What were the jobs equitable, or was everybody hurting?
I imagine everybody had their own aches and pains. It just depended on what job they were on, or they might have gotten used to it, or the people that I was around, they did voice their opinion on how achy and tired and sore they were.
Gary, Judy?
Did you ever feel like quitting? Did you think that maybe you wouldn't make it through your probationary period? Or
no.
Did any of the people that you hired in with, did they all make it through that period?
We all made it. We all made the 90 days.
I'd like to go back to your relief person. Once you got your time in and got established and was in the union, did you ever confront him about ripping you off on your relief time?
I don't think I did, because by that time I had put in a transfer for another job and I went downstairs on the A-line, so I don't remember ever confronting him about it.
Can you tell us a little bit about that job that you went to and how it compared to your previous job?
It was a good job. It was at the end of the line on the A-line, and the jobs were all done, the seats were in, and me and my partner would put plastic over the seats and put a big rubber band around the seats to, keep dirt off from them. So that was our job. It's a good job.
Marlene, tell us a little bit about pranks. Did anyone pull pranks on you? And would you share that? And did you ever pull a prank on anybody else?
Well, when I went down on the A-line, there was quite a few guys that would hang around. And anyways, I was sitting on one of those high chairs. Remember when the foremans, they didn't have an office then, they just had a high table where they had their books and whatever, and I was sitting at one of those tables and minding my own business, and someone, I don't know who it was, it was Don Bogart or who it was, came behind me and took a hold of that back seat, and I thought I was flipping backwards, and that scared me more than anything, and I jumped all over him for that, because I was like 4 months with my baby, and I said, don't ever do that to me again. So stupid. But I don't think I ever pulled any pranks on anybody. I minded my own business and like that.
Marilyn Coulter.
Now, how long had you been working when you went downstairs to the A-line?
I had been working at least 3 or 4 months.
3 months. So, how were you treated being a new hire and pregnant?
Well, mostly everybody left me alone. It got to a point where they wanted to eliminate that plastic job, and it was Rocky Wright, and he was bound and determined to eliminate that job, and he did. He got his own way eventually. And then, so I had to take out low man and trim, which was installing the rear belts. And I wasn't strong enough. There was no way I could do that job. So I just went out on maternity leave.
So you just went out on leave.
Yeah.
So, two questions. Number one, so how long, so you went out, like shortly after your 4 months? Okay.
Four or five months.
Mm-hmm. And so, once again, what is that like to work on an assembly line at a pace that you don't have any control over and being pregnant? What was that like for you? Other side of your feet killing them?
Mm-hmm.
Was that difficult?
Yeah, it was. Just, you know, you had to keep up or you'd get in trouble. You'd end up in the office. So, you had to keep up.
The next thing you said, you took out somebody. Was that a transfer? How was that? What does that mean? You took somebody else out. You took out low man. What's taking out low man?
I bumped low man in the trim shop because I had more seniority than him.
Doug Rademacher. Marlene, did you have any other family members that worked at the Fisher Body?
No.
Would you please tell us about the different supervisors you had? Did you have supervisors that were good, supervisors that were bad, and what made a good or bad supervisor?
Yes, I had good ones and bad ones. The good ones were the ones that would leave you alone, and that's the most of it. And if they left you alone, you do your job, that was good. I had a really bad foreman. It was in 1980. His name was Jerry Doan, and every day I had to go up to his desk and get chewed out about something, and he was really, really bad foreman.
Earl Nicholson.
Was he the type of guy that he just liked, he kind of liked trouble? Did he stir the pot, or was he
yes,
pushing unnecessarily?
Yes, I could tell he was the type that liked the adrenaline and getting upset and making the other person upset, and he was that type.
So how was he when he was out on the floor, when he was away from his office and he was out on the floor? Was he the type of guy that would pace up and down the line watching people? He wasn't helpful at all?
No, not really.
Gary Judy. Did he treat everybody this way, or was it just you? Do you feel you were singled out? Or?
Yes, I do. I was singled out.
Do you have any idea why he might have acted that way? Was it something maybe against women, or do you think? Or?
I do. One day I told him, I said, I got a doctor's appointment. It was that afternoon, whatever day it was, and he refused to let me out. So I left at lunch and I didn't come back for 2 weeks. I mean, he had gotten on my nerves so bad, and so I had my doctor write me out a slip, and I didn't go back for 2 weeks. I had to get away from that man.
So what happened? Did you call into work and report it to somebody that you were out on sick leave? How did that work?
Yeah, I did. I'm sure I talked to my committee man and told him what was going on. But I covered all the dates and all the times, and he tried to burn me every which way, but I had myself covered, so there wasn't too much he could do about it, and that made him angry, too.
So you were out for 2 weeks, and you come back to work, and you have to come back to the same supervisor.
Yeah.
And what happened when you came back to work? Did things change at all, or?
No. No, they didn't change. I got away from him somehow. I either put in for another job or they relocated me, or I can't remember, but I didn't have to work for him for very much longer because it wasn't working out.
Did he have other women in the area that he harassed? Or?
There was no other women there. I was the only one.
So you were the only one in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And he was probably one of those supervisors or men that didn't feel women should be working in the shop.
Yeah.
Sounds like. Yeah.
Doug Rademacher. Marlene, you said you got with committee man, your union representation. Can you imagine, one, share what it would be like to work in a plant that didn't have a union, and can you share how did that union help you in that situation?
Well, having the union there, it would be difficult to imagine what it would be like without one. Because you know there's always somebody in your corner. What was the second one?
Well, I just was curious if you needed the time off and you were able to be protected by the doctor, but did the committee, the union representation, step in and give you some support?
Yes, they did.
Did that keep that supervisor at bay a little bit?
A little bit, yeah.
Earl Nicholson?
Could you describe the interaction that you had back then? Can you remember the interaction that you had with your committee man or any other union people?
Just that they knew the problems I was having with Jerry Doan, and I kept them informed, and they helped me they helped me through that situation.
So did they come and talk to you? Did you go talk to them?
It was both. It was both ways.
And did you go to the union hall, or did you go to the work center?
I went to the work center.
And what is the work center?
It's a special place in the plant where the union reps have their offices and they're located in a particular, spot. And when you go down the work center, you can find your rep.
So was that sort of like a safe zone for you?
Yes.
That you could go in there and you could feel comfortable and you could be able to voice your problems without repercussions?
Yes. Yes. It was. It made you feel safe.
Marlene, this is Doug Rademacher. Do you have a particular committee person that helped you that you'll always be thankful for? Anybody step out there and help you out a lot?
I think Bill White was one of them, and Joe Serna was another one, and Curly Jones, he was pretty good. Those three.
Sounds like you used the union quite a bit to protect you and help you. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us what you did on your lunch break?
Oh, I always carried my lunch because it was always far to go up to the cafeteria. There wasn't that much time. And I just usually stayed in and stayed near my job. And it's just made it easier for me and rest.
You said that. I'm just curious. Did you ever get lost in the plant when you were first hired in?
Yes.
What's that like when you know you're supposed to be somewhere and the assembly line starts and you don't know where you're at?
You just start asking the first person that comes along. You ask them for directions or which way, and they get a kick out of it, but usually they're helpful. Point you in the right direction.
Is there a particular panic? Can you even describe that feeling?
Yeah, that you're going to get in trouble because you're not where you're supposed to be. Yeah, it is. It is push the panic button, definitely.
Okay. Marilyn Coulter.
Marlene, I wanted to know. You said before previously that you were the only woman working in that department. Two questions. Number one, did that happen often, that you were the only woman working in the department, and how did that work for you?
During that time, I was on first shift, and it happened more, but there were less women on the day shift. And then when I went to second shift, of course, there was more women, and which was a lot better. On the second shift.
Did the men when you work in areas, were you the only female? Did your coworkers, did they befriend you? Did they take care of you? Were you the queen, or were you somebody they wanted to push out?
There was only usually one or two that would buddy up, but the majority of the guys, they just kept to themselves. They really didn't make a point to be friendly or anything like that.
Did you find that when you went to the night shift and there were more women there, that the men and women got along better?
Yes.
What were some of the biggest differences that you noticed about the night shift and the day shift?
There's not as many shirts and ties walking around, and it was a little more relaxed, and most of my friends were on night shift, and that's where I stayed for, 20 years.
For 20 years?
Yeah.
So you said you had friends. Did any of these friendships take place outside of the plant?
Yeah, there was three. Debbie Callway and Lottie Walker and Terrell, Lori Terrell. That's it, those three.
And have you kept close contact throughout the 20 years?
With Lottie I have, mostly.
That's great. How did pass the time? Work on the line. What types of things did you guys do to pass the time, to break the monotony of work?
We could listen to radio back then, and we could look at magazines and read the newspaper, talk to our partner across the line, stuff like that.
Earl Nicholson.
You said that you were 4 months pregnant. When did you go out for maternity leave, and how long did it last?
Let me see. So my daughter was born in January, the end of January. Of 80. And then I had 6 weeks to recover after that.
And when you came back with a child, caring for a child and husband in the house, did that make your factory experience even more difficult?
Yes, it did. I remember I was in trim. I was putting the window crank on and some other things there in trim, and I remember just crying, and because my daughter was a newborn, and I'd call home, my mom was watching, but that wasn't good enough. I missed her. And I cried every day for as long as I can remember, because I missed her. Didn't want to be there, wanted to be with her. It was rough.
It was rough.
Marilyn Coulter,
it was rough. So was that a time when your friends really helped you through it? Did your friends help you get through that time?
Yes, because there was other women there. They were going through the same thing. They all had kids at home.
Marlene, you said that you worked on the assembly line. You said that you had time to read. There's time to read when you work on the line?
Depending on what job you had, how much work was on that particular job. Some you could, some you couldn't.
And what type of music? It's easy to hear a radio inside a factory. It's not noisy.
I always wore earplugs. I could always hear the radio that was playing.
Were there a lot of radios?
Yeah, sometimes they were on different stations or whatever, but that never bothered me. Just having something to listen to.
Marlene.
Gary Judy.
Now you went to trim on nights. And how long did you stay there?
Well, it was quite a while. It was a couple of years. Anyways.
And then what happened? Where'd you go?
Well, about June of 1982 was when I got called into material.
So that was a preferred job, getting called into material?
Yes, it was.
Can you tell us a little bit about that experience and what that was like, and how many, was there very many women in material at that time? Or?
My job had been eliminated again, and the foremans were looking through my transfers or something to give them, you know, a reference point to a job to put me on or that I could go to, and it just so happened I had a transfer into material, and it was Lyle Leatherberry that got me in medical and got my physical all done, and I was on a truck that evening. So
that was a predominantly male job, wasn't it, at that time? Was there very many other women on material?
There was no other women in material at that time, and I was told that it had been at least 10 years went by, and there had been no women in material for that last 10 years. So I was being watched real carefully.
So you were kind of breaking new ground for women at that time. Yes. In the plant.
Yes.
How did that feel? What was that like? And did you feel any added pressures to you? I mean, did people encourage you or discourage you? Or
there was both. There were men that turned their nose up, went the other way, and they were no help. But there was always one or two that, you know, took me under their wing and helped me, you know, made sure I didn't.
Did you find jobs and material, some of them that were hard for women to do because of the job itself? Can you describe it a little bit and what it was like?
Well, opening up the back glass racks and the door glass racks, those were really hard to open. And then out to the body shop, those big quarter racks, you had to unsnap a wooden bar and snap it back into the rack, you know, up out of the way. There was some things that it was more difficult.
So normally when you go into material, you go in as a utility person.
Right.
Is that how you went into material, as
yes.
a utility person?
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever get stuck on a job where you felt pressured that maybe you wouldn't be able to do the job because of some of those racks that were hard to open and what you did to overcome that?
I didn't ever have a fear that I wouldn't be able to do the job. If anything, I would go get my supervisor and let him know that I was having this problem or that problem, and he found another driver and to show me an easier way to open up the rack or like that. I wouldn't let it go. I'd get help.
So you never shut the line down?
No. Not that I know of.
Marilyn Coulter, to be a trucker, do you have to have any kind of training? Do you have to have any kind of annual training that you have to take or special tests? And
yeah.
So what?
Every 3 years, we have to get relicensed, and it's a physical, and then it's a written type test, and that takes about 4 or 5 hours out of the day to get that done and get relicensed.
When you first started, you said that they put you, so they tested you, trained you, and put you right on the truck that same night?
When I first went into material, they didn't have any training or anything like that set up. There was a physical, but that was it. There was no training to learn how to drive a fork truck.
On the job?
It was on the job training.
What was your first night on the truck like?
I was driving an 8,000 pounder, and that was pretty overwhelming because that was the biggest fork truck in the plant. But being out in the body shop every night, you got used to it. And then when you go to trim and use those little 6,000, you couldn't even see the forks. And so I liked being in the body shop.
How did the body shop differ from the trim shop insofar as environment and people?
Yeah, it was a lot different. In the body shop, there was a lot of sparks, a lot of smoke, and it was real noisy. And not a whole lot of room to set your stock in. And in trim, it was quiet, and everybody wore shorts. But like I said, once you get sent to body shop day in, day out for years, that's what you get used to. And that's what I got used to.
In the body shop, you're not allowed to wear shorts?
No. You have to have sleeves and long pants or wear coveralls. Cover up your skin because you don't want to get burned from the sparks.
Even truckers, along with people working a lot?
Yes.
Doug Rademacher. Marlene, you just said you preferred the body shop.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did you ever work in body shop outside of the material group?
Never.
And what about the paint department? Did you ever have to go to the paint department?
When they reduced drivers at one time, I ended up in paint up in 21-2 for a little while, a few months. That's the only contact I had with paint.
Now the 21-2, that's a location in the plant?
It's a location in the plant. The cars are already painted and they're taped off, and our job was to remove that masking tape and the paper because it was getting ready to go down into the trim shop.
You worked in trim on the assembly line. Now you were up in the paint removing paper and tape. What did you think of the difference in those jobs? What's the job, are they equitable or?
No, the ones in trim are not that good. The one in paint was a good job. All you were doing was removing protectors from the bolts on the floor. And like I said, the masking tape and the paper, just removing that and throwing it away.
Can you talk a little more about the environment? What was the air like in the paint department? And did you have to use any chemicals ever or anything around that area?
Up where I was, it was well ventilated. And it was actually a real small area. And the cars just came up out of the ovens and looped around once. And then they were done. We were done with them.
Marlene, I had the pleasure of working with you in the Fisher Body plant. Would you talk a little bit about the different jobs you did in body shop and material? And can you describe a particular location where the train would come in? And wasn't there a particular odor in that area?
Okay. Being on utility, I done every job that could be done in the body shop and driving fork truck. And there was the Hoffman, and that was an area where the paint sludge would come down from paint into these big gondolas and in big sheets of paper towel or something. And some days it would take your breath away. It smelled so bad. Thank goodness for summer, because then we got to open the door.
Can you tell us about moving into what is a different job that in the material department, one of the preferred jobs in material? Can you share that and tell us what that was?
Oh, the controller jobs were real good positions to have. You call in your trucks or you order in your trains, and the guys would haul the parts out. And controller jobs were hard to get.
Can you talk about a Friday night? Was there, in that particular group, was there camaraderie?
Yes.
What are some of the things that would happen on a Friday evening?
Well, throughout the week, we'd get together and try to set up something for Friday to have a dinner and have people bring in something. We'd make a list and have a dinner on Friday night.
Was that common practice?
Most of the time, yep.
And did that go on in other parts of the plant, or was it just in the material group?
Yeah, it went on throughout the plant also. I don't think production did that as much. But we had dinners almost every week.
Did you ever come to consider your co-workers brothers and sisters?
Yes.
Can you explain that bonding? That
well, working with them every night for 8 hours, 9 hours, and trying to help them, or they'd help you. I mean, you get close, and you know a lot about each other, and yeah.
There were programs that were introduced into the plant, and I believe you took the opportunity to be a leader in one of them. Can you say describe what that was and what you did for that?
Well, in the early years, they had the EPGs. That was Employee Participating Group, and I really enjoyed that. I was out on Track 8 at the time. That's a rail dock, and in the body shop. And I'd done that for quite a while, probably until I got laid off out of material again.
But well, you had a job, so what exactly did you do for the CPG?
We would hold weekly meetings, and I would have the guys. It was mostly about safety and safety hazards, things that were unsafe, and the floors being in really bad shape and trying to get the floors fixed and things like that, of that nature.
Marilyn Coulter.
Marlene, we're talking about safety. Can you tell us some of the things that happen as a trucker where safety is concerned? I know that with pedestrian or structure type things that have happened.
Well, it was always the pedestrian had the right of way, and we always had to be alert, paying attention, because there would be people that would cut through, and you wouldn't see them until the last second. But after people did get hurt or whatever happened, they started making the pedestrian routes. They outlined it in green, and that helped a little bit to let the pedestrians have their own little walkway, and it helped a little.
I know that there were some times when some truckers would hit pipes and things like that. Did that ever happen to you?
Mostly. When you're backing up and you didn't see the steel beam behind you, back up into the beam, but that was a wake up. I'm trying to think. I never spilled any a load, and just backed into a beam 3 or 4 times. But that's about it.
Doug Rademacher, you said you never spilled a load.
Mm-hmm.
Was there anything that was, if you did spill a load, was there something that was expected of you?
Yeah, you had to jump down off your truck fast and get the stock back in the basket and be on your way, because you'd be blocking the aisle.
But what about the fellow truckers? And was there a due to be paid for that?
Yep. When you spilled a load, you had to bring in donuts the next day for everybody.
Okay.
That was the law.
I want to take you into a different part of your work life, and this is union activities. Were you ever active in your union?
Going to the union meetings.
Did you participate in the elections?
Always.
What was your feeling about people that didn't exercise that right?
Well, it's their choice to be involved or not. I wouldn't hold it against them, but that's what you're there for, to help us and stuff.
Marilyn Coulter. Marlene, can you tell us, how did you find out about the different candidates who are running for offices, to be officers in your local union? How did that happen?
Mostly, the candidates would come in on the shop floor and hand out flyers with their picture and all of their background and information on it, and like that. That's how I'd hear about it.
Was it difficult to do your job and also listen to campaign speeches at the same time? Or how did that go for you?
I think they knew if we were on a run or we had stock on the front of our truck, they wouldn't hold us up for too long. So, but the sheet gave all the information that we needed.
Doug Rademacher. Marlene, I want to talk about the benefits. Could you share what is your most appreciated bargain benefit that the union had secured at the bargaining table for you?
I'd have to say health care, because it's pretty tough in this world without it. So I'm very appreciative of that.
Was there any other benefits that you were able to utilize? Any of the education things? Can you tell us about those? And
yes, the TAP, I got quite a bit of money for my daughter. She's been in college for 5 years. And I've been taking classes since last May. And so that's a good program.
Okay.
Marvin, what is TAP?
Tuition Assistance Program.
Could you tell us community activities? You've worked and you've met lots of people. Do you do anything outside of the plant? Has your plant life affected things that you see that are needed in the community? And have you done anything outside of the plant?
I signed up for community service in May of 05 at the Goodwill up in Mason. And I worked up there every day for 30 weeks. I got all my sheets. I kept them all together. And that was a good experience. It was having donations being brought in, sorting through the donations, and then getting them up on the floor to sell. And I enjoyed working at Goodwill.
That's wonderful. Can you just take for a moment and think about anything that special happened to you in the years at Fisher Body? Did anyone do something special? Was there ever a day that stands out as the best day you ever had at Fisher Body? And if not, could you tell me you're the worst?
That'd be two days long. Well, it's the night I got my daughter back from Mexico, and my mother and brother picked me up in Detroit. And the very first stop I made, I came up to the shop and brought my daughter in, and everybody got to see Marisa. So that was one of the best.
Earl Nicholson, Marlene, you might have to explain that one just a little bit.
When my daughter was 2.5, her dad picked her up for a visit on a Sunday, and he was supposed to take her to Greenfield Village for the day, and he was supposed to be back by 6 or 7. Well, 6 and 7 came and went, and I found out after a few days that he had plane tickets, and it was all arranged, and he took her to Mexico. He flew to Mexico, and it took me 16 months to get her back home, and it was right around Christmas time when I got the call that they had arrested him, and they said, get down here right away by tomorrow, this is such and such a time. And I did. I got down there the next day, and it was kind of funny because I flew out of Lansing, and I told the stewardess on this little prop plane, I said, I got to make my connection in Chicago to Mexico because I haven't seen my daughter in 16 months, and they found her. And so they radioed ahead to Chicago, and they held this plane for me for 45 minutes. They held it open, and they had guards running with me through O'Hare, got me to the plane, and I made my flight. Otherwise, I would have never got down there in time. And so anyways, I got my daughter back.
Were you working at during this time period?
Yes.
And when you got the news, were you at work?
I was at home.
And does this happen on a weekend, or was it during a weekday?
It was a weekday.
And how did you secure the time away from the factory in order to...
I remember getting a hold of Lyle Auten and telling him that I had to go and I'd be back within a couple of days. And I was back within 3 days, I think.
But there was no harassment or something that said, just go do it.
Right. They were totally understanding.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Marlene. Marilyn Coulter, you worked in the factory since 1978. You've been through a lot. You know, you've broken ground. You've been through a lot of things personally. What would you think would be one of the made Fisher Body the capital of quality, as it became known as?
I just think that we had a oneness. And we worked most of the time. We worked together pretty well, and in our union, got a good union.
after all this time, now it's closing. They're going to tear it down and fish your body. Lansing Car Assembly, as we know, will no longer be. How do you feel about that?
Well, it's sad. I drive by every once in a while, and it's going to be sad to see it go. And but sort of looking ahead to go into the new plant. It's a little bit scary, but we all got to do it.
What words of wisdom would you give to a young lady now coming in facing the things that you've faced in the factory? What words of wisdom would you leave for young people?
Well, my daughter works at Lear right now. She makes the seats that go into the Cadillacs. And I do tell her to wrap up her wrists and wear comfortable shoes, and get to know your union reps, and do the best job that you can, be on time, and all of that. I've told her that when she first started, and I do remind her that every now and then, but she's a good employee. She's always on time and always there.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. You told her to wrap up her wrist. Why do you tell her to wrap up her wrist?
I don't want her to get an injury to her hands, to get carpal tunnel, or just give her wrist some support, and then hopefully she won't get the carpal tunnel. That's all I'm really worried about.
Thank you.
Well, it's been a real pleasure. Doug Rademacher, Marlene, we really appreciate the opportunity to interview you. Is there anything we did not ask you that you'd like to share today? Well, as you said, you are exercising your tap money, and you have a class to get to, so we really appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marlene.
Thank you.